Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Jake Burton Carpenter has been called the godfather of snowboarding, the patriarch of the sport. While Burton Carpenter didn't invent snowboarding, he's certainly one of the sport's early and most successful pioneers. He founded Burton Snowboards in 1977, and over decades he forged the equipment and culture that would come to define the sport. Here he is talking about his company in a conversation recorded with his wife Donna, Burton's CEO, in August of 2016.
Originally, for me, snowboarding was sort of a get-rich-quick scheme, and it became much more than that because I didn't get rich quick. After a couple of years, it became much more important to me that I was right about the decision that there was a sport there, and I focused not about my own material needs or accomplishments or whatever. I just thought about the sport, and that's when things started to happen for me, was when I really focused on the sport and convincing people that kind of laughed at me.
Donna reflected on the community snowboarding gave them, both in Vermont and across the globe.
You know, what's really cool is it became a global community really early on. And it was such a blur between, you know, what was quote-unquote work and what was fun.
I think that snowboarding provided us with wealth and enabled
and
us.
And a family.
And a
like
family.
A worldwide
yes,
family.
And a lifestyle that is so cool and just living it.
In recent years, Jake's health declined. In 2011, he was diagnosed with testicular cancer. He later developed an autoimmune nerve disease known as Miller-Fisher syndrome that left him paralyzed for several months in 2015. Jake and Donna reflected on how his illness brought their family and them closer together.
You know, obviously the intimacy of starting a business in Europe together is amazing. We were two young people on our own trying to start a business in Europe. But there was nothing like the intimacy of the last year.
Not remotely.
I was your nurse.
I mean, I never really even understood living for the moment and living in the present. And I think that I do that now.
And our extended family around the world, the people that keep us going every single day. I mean, that's amazing to have.
Jake finished that 2016 StoryCorps interview saying, quote, "It's a love story, but snowboarding gave us so much. We owe that sport." Jake died last week from complications related to cancer. He was 65. Joining us today to share thoughts on the life and legacy of this snowboarding pioneer are Kevin Pierce, Pat Bridges, and Chris Doyle. Kevin Pierce is a former professional snowboarder. He suffered a traumatic brain injury at 22 while training for the U.S. Olympic team. And it was Jake Burton Carpenter who was on his very first ride back down the mountain more than a year after his injury. Pat Bridges is a reporter and editorial director for Snowboarder magazine, the longest-running media outlet focused on snowboarding. He's originally from Killington, where he first learned about snowboarding and now works in California. And he flew to Vermont to pay his respects and to do some mountain runs in Jake's honor at the memorial services held in Stowe yesterday. And Doyle, Chris Doyle, is the rapid prototype engineer and mad scientist at Burton Snowboards. He's known Jake since 1993 and worked alongside him at Burton since 1996. Thanks very much to all three of you for being here. I really appreciate your time and your reflections. Thanks.
Awesome.
Kevin, I want to start with you. You have known Jake Burton Carpenter as a professional mentor, but also as a deep personal friend. Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with him?
Yeah, I was super lucky to have my relationship start with Jake at a very young age because of my mom and the family. It really started when I was 4 years old that I got to know Jake, and he actually made me the first ever kid's snowboard when I was five. I wrote him a letter because they didn't make boards my size, and then sure enough, one showed up in the mail for me.
And it was just a single-made kid's board?
It was the only board. It was before kid's board were made. I'm 32, and that was when I was 4 years old. So.
And he didn't just take the wheels off a skateboard and give it to you?
Basically, it looked like a little skateboard.
And so you've known him then since you were four, since you wrote him that letter and he made you a board. How did your relationship change and deepen as you got more into the sport and thought of it as a professional activity rather than just, you know, something that you did as a kid for fun?
Totally. It turned into a complete and total lifestyle of where snowboarding was my everything. I hated school. I wasn't very good at school, and I was awesome at snowboarding. So Jake allowed me to live my dreams and made it possible for me to do what I love very most.
A lot of people in Vermont and beyond will remember your injury and how devastating it was and how close to death you were and how difficult that recovery was. And you and I have talked about that with your brother as well on this show. Why was Jake Burton Carpenter somebody who you wanted with you on your first run back down the mountain?
I think that was so important because Jake knew me and he understood me in a different way. And he was able to really be there and relate with me on that level. And he really got it.
Alexa writes from New York City. I remember my dad taking me to the Burton factory in Manchester around 1985 to get his first swallowtail Burton board snowboard, which was allowed at Stratton and Magic Mountain if you had a, quote, license. My dad is now 78 and has been snowboarding ever since. What a great sport and a brilliant addition to the mountain experience. David in Burlington says, in the early 80s, my sister was at UVM, and I was a young teen who loved skiing at Smuggs. We grew up in the south end of Burlington, and I had a snurfer, which was my preferred method of launching down hills while everyone else used sleds. My sister started dating one of the members of the first Burton riding crew, and she got me one of the early wooden boards with triangular metal edges, but it was only for regular riders, and I rode goofy, so I'd jam my foot in backwards on the front strap. She soon passed on one of the performer boards, but they wouldn't let me use it on the chairlift at Smuggs. By the time the cruiser board came along with the revolutionary cracked metal edges, J-Peak allowed them, so my pals and I started to trek there. You had to get certified to ride the triple chairlift because it's all expert trails, and I knew I had arrived when I got that pass with the black diamond next to my name. I still have that original wooden board with Jake's name on it, as it was one of his private stash, my sister's boyfriend told me way back then. For me and then millions of others, Jake was responsible for so many moments of sheer ecstatic joy. At least for me, some of my top 10 moments of the pure adrenaline rush that became watershed events include a handful of them snowboarding in my mid-century of life. Jake's humility and grace in the fact that he achieved his dream that was about making it, but also bringing joy to so many others, will be his true legacy. Pat Bridges, does that resonate for you, all that stuff that David in Burlington's talking about?
Well, certainly. And even what Alexa was saying, I mean, it's all very true. I mean, growing up in Killington, Vermont, southern Vermont, we would make pilgrimages to Manchester. You know, I remember walking into the showroom for the first time in 1985 after I had gotten my first snowboard for Christmas that year. And just looking at it, I mean, even to what I do today at Snowboarder Magazine, there was a magazine back then that you could only get at the Burton showroom. But it was so intimate, but you'd also see, you know, the spawn of the Burton family down there. But there's people who worked at Manchester that still to this day that I saw in 1985 work at the company, you know, so there's an intimacy there. But talking about the certification, I mean, yesterday at the memorial service at Stowe, I saw the man who wouldn't allow me on the slopes of Stratton, who turned me down for getting my certification. I talked to him and I was like, hey, you know, I eventually got better. I let him know I did get on the slopes. But I mean, that sort of thing was all wrought by Jake, you know, like that was him going resort to resort because he knew even at that time. And it wasn't just to get Burton snowboards on the slope, any snowboard. He went from ski area to ski area and he, you know, had a lot of humility in the face of a lot of cynicism in dealing with a ski establishment that really didn't look at the long tail of this and what the big picture would be. And Jake, you know, selflessly, I mean, sure, he wanted to grow his company along with the sport, but we all reap the benefits of what he did in those early days. It's all very true.
Pat, do you think things would have been different? I mean, we heard Jake talking in that StoryCorps interview about how originally this was a get-rich-quick scheme, but then he quickly realized that he was going to have to grow the sport and that it wasn't necessarily get-rich-quick, but build something bigger than himself and his fortune. If he had just said, look, I'm just in it to make money, do you think snowboarding would be what it is today?
Well, that's something that's not lost on me because, you know, he was very open about the fact that he came in looking to, you know, better his lifestyle and saw an opportunity, a white space to come in and create something that he could make money at. Yet over the years, I mean, he obviously met the people found people with like-minded passions and spawned a community. And it transitioned pretty quick where he wasn't the last person to come into snowboarding thinking it was a get-rich-quick scheme. But pretty early on, his role shifted to where he had to look out for it on an equal balance, you know, both the capitalism as well as, you know, the passion. And he had that balance. But not everybody did. And that's where the sport really benefited from the fact that here's somebody who's a leader in the market, but also a leader in the culture. And everybody else coming in was very one-sided, and they didn't get that part of the calculus, which is the difference between, I mean, make no mistake, brands like Nike came in with an agenda of dominating the market in snowboarding, think they could steamroll it, but they didn't get the culture, they didn't get the passion, and frankly, they were doing it more for the bottom line than the line to the bottom.
Doyle, what about working for Burton, which you've done for more than 20 years now? I mean, you know, Pat's talking about the bottom line, and Burton is certainly a company, and it has to make money to exist, and there is that fine line. And often as a sport gets bigger and as the person who's sort of seen as the pioneer of that sport grows and a company grows, it becomes more corporate. And that person sort of loses their shine as a, you know, counterculture kind of dude. And it doesn't seem like Jake ever lost that. What's the ethos like at Burton in terms of, you know, having a culture that is respected as well as working for a company that's trying to build a profit?
Well, one of the first things that I learned working for Jake right away was that it's all about the riders, and the reason I ended up working at Burton Snowboards is because, you know, like Kevin and other riders like him, I used to travel around to contests and tune their gear, and if things broke, I fixed it and tried to keep everybody in the show, and Jake, I guess, must have taken note of that, because all of a sudden I was invited to come join the company. And but his focus to me was always about the riders. I remember talking to him one time at a photo shoot where I was mentioning something I did for, let's say, Terrier, and he just looked at me and he goes, "You keep that guy happy." Okay. And the whole idea was that if you took care of the riders and you really paid attention to their needs, then the products that we needed to make would just come out of that. And that's where I made a lot of prototypes, and those prototypes did become products. And it is really pretty wild to see things that you worked on from back then still on snow now, and how that has changed in the 20 plus years that I've been doing it. So the focus on the riders and keeping up with them, just trying to keep up. One year the riders are going this high out of the pipe, and the next thing you know, like suborbital, and it was just like, oh my gosh, how do we keep up and make something for these guys? I mean, making things for Kevin was ridiculous. I mean, the guy put the stuff through the paces was crazy.
Well, Kevin, what is it do you think about snowboarding that makes it, I mean, there are a lot of sports, and there are a lot of sports that have cultures that are built up around them, but snowboarding certainly does. And what do you think makes it feel like a community or a culture rather than just a sport?
I think it's that we're all out there having fun, and we're all having the best possible time you could ever have doing something. Like, snowboarding is, it's a total dream, and it allows you to access that flow state where, you know, that place where you get and it's complete calm and easy. When I'm on my board, I'm just the happiest man in the world. And I think that is what Jake knew, and it is so unbelievable that he was able to appreciate the riders in the way that he did and give them the respect and give them the love that they needed to succeed. And that's why we were able to do what we do, is because of people like Jake and Doyle that create this stuff and really allow us to succeed. So it was so easy.
We're hearing from a lot of people who share that kind of perspective. Betsy Shaw in Manchester Center says, "Jake's stubborn audacity ultimately defined a big chunk of my life and gave me the opportunity to travel the world competing in a sport I was crazy about. When I learned to snowboard, I was a 20-year-old ski racing dropout and, frankly, totally lost and sad soon-to-be college dropout. What began as a fun diversion and a brief night job answering the phone at Burton Factory turned into a Burton-sponsored 12-year stint on the National and World Cup snowboarding circuit and culminated at the Olympic snowboarding debut in Nagano, Japan. It was like joining the funnest on-snow circus family you could imagine, traveling 8 months out of the year from continent to continent, country to country, glacier to glacier, mountain to mountain. None of it would have happened for me if it weren't for this man we all called Jake, who refused to accept that playing was just for kids. This man was so tuned into and turned on by the inherent human need for outdoor play. We need more of that attitude and more people like Jake who enable, encourage, and entice everyone to go outside. Without Jake, the world feels a little bit less magical. And while I know he didn't invent the sport, boy, did his passion for it make things happen. Amazing things. But every time I see another tiny, smiling person standing sideways while whizzing down a ski slope, I'm reassured that Jake's magic lives on. Thanks, Jake. Shred on. Ian is on the line with us from Killington. Hey, Ian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My name's Ian Spiro. I grew up with Pat in Killington, and I remember getting my certification or trying for it at Pico Mountain. I was really sad to hear about Jake and really upset I couldn't make it to the funeral yesterday, or the memorial. And I just have a lot of respect for your panelists. Doyle, you have made some of my runs the most fantastic I ever had in the half pipe. Your tuning is just legendary in my mind. And
well, thanks,
and
Ian.
Pat, we go back a long ways. Kevin, you really took the sport to a new level. And anyway, I just wanted to express my love for Jake, for the whole Burton family. And the fact that that Jake took me under his wing and I became part of the global team and was able to travel the world, it was just a ticket to freedom and to experience the love and closeness of the snowboarding community. And, you know, I was only a paid snowboarder for so long, but I feel that I always will represent Burton and be a Burton rider for life.
Ian, thanks. Kevin, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, just so all the listeners can know, Ian Spiro is one of the most legendary, unbelievable riders of all time. So that means a lot to hearing from Ian.
Yeah,
I'm gonna,
Doyle?
I'm going to second that for Kev. I still have Ian's Snow Transworld magazine cover shot on my shop at home. and working with guys like Spiro and so many of the women as well, like Victoria and Nicole and Betsy even. I remember tuning Betsy's board at the U.S. Open back in the day. And I would learn so much from the riders and the energy that the riders gave me, that what I was doing for them made their performance better. When a rider would come back and they had done really well and I'm covered in wax and I didn't even see them go. And they would be like, oh man, that was great. Give me another shot of that. And it was addictive and it still is.
Yeah, Ian, I've known Ian since he was five and took him to his first snowboard contest. And I remember Ian got asked to go film for a movie by Burton, and we drove cross-country immediately overnight from Oregon to Vermont just so he could travel to New Zealand to film for his first video. And yeah, Ian's a great friend, and I'm great to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for that call, Ian, and for sharing your experiences. And, you know, you can see so many people and hear from so many people who have had long and deep connections to Burton, to Jake Burton Carpenter, and to this community that the three of you are also a part of, that, you know, clearly shows how cohesive and tight the snowboarding community is, even from top to bottom. And so many people thinking about Jake Burton Carpenter and what snowboarding has meant for them. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're reflecting on the life of Jake Burton Carpenter, known as the godfather of snowboarding, who revolutionized a sort of quirky hobby a few people had, sliding down hills on what were kind of like surfboards or sleds or skateboards without wheels, into what it has now become, an Olympic sport, a staple of winter recreation, certainly part of Vermont's culture, and an industry that has spawned competitors, technological improvements, and all kinds of associated gear. We're hearing from former pro snowboarder and friend of Jake's Kevin Pierce, Snowboarder Magazine reporter and editorial director Pat Bridges, and Burton mad scientist and rapid prototype engineer Chris Doyle. Lots of people reflecting on Facebook. Lisa says, when I was the editor of the Mountain Times, snowboarding was voted the favorite new trend in an annual favorites list we compiled. I sent the certificate to Jake personally because, well, he was the godfather of snowboarding. I got the nicest personally written thank you letter back from him, and I was so impressed that he took the time to write back. Nicola on Facebook says, I will remember him for providing awesome clothing and gear for my four sons every season since we moved to Vermont 20 years ago. They now all snowboard. Blue Driver says, I've been a skier for over 60 years and I have no desire to snowboard. But I will say, God bless Jake Burton. Snowboarders have kept the lights on at many ski areas, and skiing technology and technique have learned a lot from snowboarding. And Amy in Brookline, Massachusetts says she worked for Burton in the early 2000s and writes, he was an amazing man and leader, gone too soon. Let's go to Daniel, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Daniel.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you? What are you thinking about?
Well, I just wanted to mention that having worked for the Postal Service for 27 years and being a letter carrier in Burlington, Vermont, myself, I delivered probably over 1,000 snowboards. And on the 32 route, you would walk in the morning on Pine Street, and there were days, there were just so many snowboards that had to get delivered. And day in, day out through the years, Burton Snowboard, they generated tremendous income for the Burlington, Vermont itself, just the entire community. Just I just know that when we would go there, the letter carriers, there was always a family feeling in that place. The people were just happy to work at Burton, and it was just such a wonderful place to deliver and pick up the snowboards, and snowboards coming in from all over the world. It was great.
Daniel, did you have to do some fancy maneuvering in your truck to fit the snowboards in with their long shapes? I mean, that must have been interesting as a postal carrier.
Well, actually, no, the two-ton truck, it was big enough to fit the snowboards, and it was the right vehicle for the job. And I would pull out, UPS would pull in, and it was just, you know, no, I didn't really have to do too much maneuvering. Just I think it worked out quite well. But I always enjoyed that delivery. And person who actually was on that route and still is for over 20 years is Tanya King, and she would have all the stories. But I have to say myself, covering that route, I really enjoyed being in that company and making the delivery. It felt like if I wasn't working at the Postal Service, that is a place I would love to have worked for sure.
Well, Daniel, thanks for your call. I was not necessarily expecting a postal carrier to be talking about the impact that Burton Snowboards and Jake Burton Carpenter has had. So it's a neat little aspect into another facet of this story. Lee emailed in to say, I met Jake Carpenter in 1982, becoming his assistant, answering calls and shipping backhill and performer snowboard orders out from his home office and shop in Manchester. I recall him going to Japan, maybe for the first time, to find or meet with a distributor. The guy hustled, a true entrepreneur. His mind was always going, tracking his new ideas on index cards. In 1983, I moved from Manchester to Burlington to return to college at UVM. After a long stint in the solid waste and hazmat waste management industries, I got fed up and I contacted Jake to see if he had a job for me again. Being Jake, he offered me three possible positions. He would hand-deliver pies and cash bonuses at Thanksgiving. He was always cutting edge. I have lots of fond memories. His spirit lives on in a lot of people who he touched, and my heart mostly goes out to Donna and her family. And, of course, our hearts all go out to the Burton family, the large Burton family, and Jake Burton Carpenter's family as well. I think all three of you were at the service yesterday, and I'm wondering, you know, as you reflect on Jake Burton Carpenter's life and what it felt like to be surrounded by so many people who really deeply care about this sport and cared about the man himself. Kevin, what did that feel like to be sharing and in this celebration of life, but also this deep sadness that so many people really feel?
It was a really, really special service, and it was so unbelievable to see the boys, Jake, George, and Timmy, step up and be there like their dad would want them to. And, you know, they said some amazing words that really reflected Jake's life perfectly. And it was for sure the most special gathering I've ever been to. And to see Donna there and how she held herself, I was just blown away.
Doyle, what does it feel like at the company? I mean, it must be a big...
It is.
Gap, gaping hole, you know.
It is. And these things will probably... flesh out and become better over time. It is very difficult, but I will say that when we got the news on Thursday, we had scheduled our regularly, it's an annual event that I kind of started 15 or so years ago where we throw a wax party the day before opening day, and we call it Tunes and Tunes. And it's just music, and everybody brings their board in, and, you know, we have a bunch of beverages in a garbage can. If there's snow outside, that's how we keep them cold. And we have it at our Craig's prototype shop, and everybody brings their boards in. and it's just this joyous, super fun thing. People bring their kids, and everybody gets their boards all prepped for opening day the next day. And we're just so – I'm so happy that we had that scheduled anyway. And when my boss, Rob Sprague, called me up in the morning to give me the news personally, I asked him immediately, do we postpone or do we keep going? And he said, if you can pull it, just keep going. And so that evening, I did about 150 boards.
So everybody still puts their feet where their mouth is.
It was true, and it was really fun because the whole company really needed something. We needed an activity, and so we pushed the start time up till about 1:30 or 2 in the afternoon, and everybody came over to Craig's, and everybody had brought their boards with them, and it was joyous. It was electric, and everybody's over there rubbing and scrubbing away, and I personally went back to my roots as a Grindrite tuner guy, and I just drove the edging machine, and I got to touch everybody's boards and sort of direct traffic for where they needed to go next, whether they were super trashed or, you know, barely touched, and it's so great fun because we've done the event so many times that everybody kind of knows what to do now. And everybody, it was very family feeling. And I remember looking over at the end and there was this little guy, couldn't have been more than 5 years old. And he's scraping his board with his big sister standing over his shoulder, supervising him. And I just thought that was the future and that's good.
We got a note from Lori Asperas, who wrote in from France, saying that at 57, she is still rocking a snowboard with pride. And she says, I want to pay tribute to the man who gave me my wings, Jake Burton Carpenter. In March 1985, a photo of me on my Burton Woody wearing board shorts and Vans, shot by Stratton photographer Hubert Schreibel, ended up in Newsweek and on the cover of the Daily News. Jake wrote me an incredibly inspiring letter about how I could really help the sport of snowboarding. There was no industry at the time, and snowboarding was still forbidden in most ski areas. Later, I found myself in Jake's office at the old factory thanking him for the opportunity to ride but not work for Burton. Because of Jake's belief in me and the need for public outreach, I took on showing off the boards and the sport through international modeling and competition. I was able to show the world that women can be beautiful and shred. Jake gave me and others the possibility to be part of a world movement and in our turn to inspire countless others. He was organic in his vision, a global artist in the way he materialized his dream. Jake transformed my life. I'm eternally grateful to Jake and the woman who was the wind under his wings, his wife, Donna. And let's go to Simon, who's calling in from the Bahamas. This is Simon Pierce, Kevin's dad, who's calling in. Hi, Simon. You want to share a story as well?
Oh, hi there. Yeah. I wanted to say what an incredible sadness to have lost Jake at such a young age. And Kevin probably doesn't know this, but the first time I met Jake, I was driving north on a very snowy, wintry night in 1980 with my brother and Kevin's uncle, Michael. And we were coming near Londonderry, and Michael says, I need to stop and see an old school friend of mine. Not an old, he was very young at the time. And there was Jake in this barn covered in sawdust. It was about 8 o'clock at night, and he was in there working on plywood. And we were headed north to look at a mill in Queechy, Vermont. But what I really wanted to say, which I haven't heard, was Jake and Donna are two of the most generous people I have ever known in my life. And I was on Jake's board for a year, and I said, Jake, I'm not the right man for this board. You need somebody who knows more about sports. But Jake and Donna, the more they got, the more they gave. And they shared with everybody, and it wasn't just the company or the riders. They were just incredibly and are generous people. And I just wanted to make that one point. So,
well, Simon, thank you. Thanks for sharing your personal reflections and that thought. And Pat Bridges, you know, the Carpenter family has asked that in lieu of flowers, people make donations in Jake's name to the Chill Foundation, which they founded, which helps people who don't necessarily have the means to get on a snowboard and get out to the mountain and do that. And do you see that reflected in what Simon Pierce was saying, this sense of generosity and this spirit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a couple of years ago, I had a chance to connect with Jake, and one of the things he was really beaming about on a more local level is the swimming hole in Stowe, which is, you know, a swimming facility for the community there. But it's any manner of stuff. The kids were talking about how Jake was Little League coach. I mean, he was a genuine, authentic, very giving individual, and so is his wife, you know. And yeah, the Chill Foundation, that's one part of how they gave back. I mean, even more intimate to the community, there's something I can speak to that is a testament. Is there's two people. There's this guy, Todd Coleman, and a guy named Jeff Baliba. Jeff Baliba's job for Burton, he's the only person in the whole sport of snowboarding whose job is to focus on growth and retention of the sport. Now, that's not just Burton. That's like going to resorts, creating the Riglet parks for kids to come in an environment that's going to be fun. And then the counterpoint is this guy, Todd Coleman, who is the archivist for Burton Snowboards. And Todd Coleman, he you know, curates the canon. And not just the Burton canon, you know, like there's catalogs going back to the late 70s that they have restored and stored, and all the media inherent to snowboarding. And these are people that, you know, are stewards of the sport, and will sit there and look at it in a way and help the sport that is, yeah, Burton benefits from it, but everybody benefits from it. And that's another charitable thing that people look at. But sure, the Chill Foundation, getting underprivileged youth out onto the slopes, but they also donate to local community and snowboarding programs. It's hard to find a part of our sport that hasn't been impacted and touched and benefited from the legacy.
And I'll also mention certainly big supporters of VPR over the years as well, the Carpenters and Donna Carpenter in particular. Let's go to Sky in Weston. Hi, Sky.
Hello. Hey, thanks so much for hosting this. And Doyle, Bridges, Kevin, so much respect for you all. But just want to, I was a local scrappy kid down here in southern Vermont and was so fortunate to have Jake come to town and, you know, launch this sport. And I want to speak to, because, you know, I ended up shooting photography in it for, I don't know, 20 years, something like that. But what Jake did was amazing in terms of how he celebrated the creative aspects of snowboarding. It's one of the most graceful, beautiful sports there is. And, you know, through working with Michael Jagger and incredible graphic designers all along, and then, you know, leading to so many artist series, you look across so many snowboarders and they're just such an incredibly inspiring, like, creative bunch of people.
Well, Sky, and I appreciate that thought. And you know, the artistry and, you know, certainly not just in the sport itself, but also in the design of snowboards. And Doyle, I know you have a big hand in this too, but then also in the graphics and all of the different ways that snowboarders express themselves through the sport, physically and in the gear. And Burton has had a big role in that. And Sky, we're short on time, so I want to make sure that we have a chance to wrap up here, because Kevin, Pat, and Doyle, I mean, you all have different experiences with the sport and different experiences with Jake. And I'm wondering how you think about Jake's inspiration as you move forward. And Doyle, starting with you, I mean, certainly for you, this is a big part of your professional life still, and all three of you really, but, you know, how are you thinking about this and framing it?
Well, there's a lot that's going through my mind right now that I'm having a difficult time honestly processing, but it takes me back to my you know, my first day on the job, and I came into Burton sort of in an unusual way. And all of a sudden I feel his eyes boring into the side of my head, and I look over and it's Jake just radar locked on me coming down the hallway, and he sticks his head into my lab and he goes, "You work here now?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, I started today." And he has this big smile and he shakes my hand. He's like, "Well, welcome to Burton." And I said, "Oh, thanks." And then his face just goes to stone. He looks at me with these just unblinking eyes. And I'm going to paraphrase here because Jake was very plain spoken, but he says to effect, "Just don't mess it up." And he turns around and walks out. And I went, "Oh my gosh, that guy's my boss now." And to this day, you just don't want to let him down and you don't want to mess it up.
Well, I appreciate you being here, Doyle. I appreciate you thinking and talking about that. Chris Doyle is the rapid prototype engineer and mad scientist at Burton Snowboards. Kevin, what about for you? What are you thinking?
I think for me it was Jake's generosity and Jake's happiness of life. He lived unlike anyone I've ever seen live, and he inspired me to live my life how I live it. And it has been something that I will, for sure, without a doubt, carry on with me forever.
That's Kevin Pierce, former professional snowboarder, now a sports commentator, motivational speaker, and advocate for those with brain injury and Down syndrome. And Pat, final thoughts from you.
Well, I just hope that, you know, whoever carries on the mantle adheres to Jake's doctrine of listen to the riders. That's something that we need moving forward, you know, and for the sport to remain healthy and, you know, something we all love to do and for people to have access to it, we need a figurehead to step up and take that role.
Pat Bridges is originally from Killington, now lives in California, where he's a reporter and editorial director for Snowboarder magazine. Thanks to all three of you for helping us honor and talk about Jake Burton Carpenter today.
Thanks for having us, Jane.
Thanks, Thank you. Jane.